Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning and welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio. And joining me here in studio is Republican State Representative Jim Durkin from Western Springs. He is the Illinois House Republican leader. And Leader Durkin, thank you so much for joining me here this morning. Wait. Try it again here.
It's great to be in studio and not calling in either.
I think we might have a little bit of a mic problem here. So, see, we get you to come in. We get you to come all the way in, and then we turn the mic off. How about that? It's now let's give it a try.
Good morning, Rick.
Here we go. Now let's give it a try.
All right. Good morning.
Yeah. Still seem to be having a little bit of audio technical problems here. Why don't you slide over here by me, and we'll see if we can't figure things out on the board here, if you don't mind. That's the beauty of live radio here.
That's those Democrats, Rick.
You know,
every time, you know?
Oh, it was Greg Harris who sabotaged the microphone.
Yeah, he's that type of guy. But anyway, it's good to be here in studio, Rick, as opposed to online.
It's nice to have you here.
Thank you.
I want to ask you, because at the end of session, things moved very rapidly, and as part of the budget, up popped these business tax credit business initiatives that had long been sought. I mean, your caucus had long sought these as part of a final deal. They were nowhere to be found. And then all of a sudden it was, the Democrats said we're going to go and add these things. What evolved there? What happened there?
Well, let me go back about 3 weeks before session was completed. The whole discussion about capital and also possibly a bipartisan budget were, people talk about. And we knew that the Democrats did not want to do it alone. They were prepared to do it, but they wanted to get, I know the governor particularly wanted to get bipartisan
right.
support on major issues regarding the budget and capital. We had listed the House Republicans put a list of demands together that we felt were important for us if they were going to seek our votes. Tax incentives for the data center, the elimination of the franchise tax, which is a huge, huge issue within the small business community. The list goes on, but also some other things was to stop the governor from dismantling the tuition tax credit program. That was, to me, very personal. I made those very strong comments at the beginning of the year. Those were one of the many things that we said that if you want Republicans in the House to support, to get engaged, to put votes possibly on a budget and capital, every one of these, not five or six of them, 90%, 100% of these have to be brought into the, have to be part of the package. I will say that on the Wednesday before we finished up our work, there was little support or, I would say, interest by the Democrats to engage the Republicans with these issues. It was more like, how many votes you got on the Capitol bill? How many votes? And I said, look, I want to know, what are you going to do with our reforms, the House Republican reforms? And that continued on until Thursday. I take it back until Friday morning, in which I had a meeting with President Cullerton and Speaker Madigan. And the three of us met, and Leader Brady, and I asked the Speaker specifically, where are you with our list of reforms and also some things that are not in the bill regarding the tuition tax credit program and a few other things. The Speaker told me that the governor had rejected all those, and that was Friday. And I said, all right, we're done.
Right.
So about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I get a call from the governor's office, please come to my office. And then there I met with the Speaker and also the governor, and he said, I want to revisit your issues. And this is the governor. And I said, well, Governor, my position hasn't changed. Every one of these issues has to be incorporated into the budget before, or an agreement that would be in the budget before I can go to my membership and say that, you know what, I think we've got something to work with, and let's try to, get some votes together. So it was a long day on Friday, and continuing, I had meetings with John Cullerton, Speaker Madigan, and the governor individually, and then at about 8 o'clock at night on Friday, the governor, the speaker, the president, and I hashed out a deal in the governor's office in which we went through each one of our business reforms and also some of these things that were not in, you know, there was a terrible, anti-refinery bill that was was part of it, which was going to force unionization of all refineries in Illinois and also chemical plants and ethanol plants. I asked for a one-year hold on that. So there's a lot of other things that I had asked for that didn't show up in the bill, but were agreements that we made. So by the time 8 o'clock came around, we had gone, we meaning the governor, president, speaker, myself, went through each and every one of these, and the governor said, all right, I'll include these in your into the bill. Can you get me votes? I said, all right, let me work on it. And you know what? It's the way it should be. And I took the position, and my caucus took the position, if our votes are going to mean something, if they want our votes, they're going to mean something. That means we need to get something out of this, something for the business community, something that the business community has, long desired out of Springfield. A lot of these issues, particularly the elimination of the franchise tax, it's been around for a long time. We couldn't get any movement on it. A lot of these things sat in that rules committee for such a long time. But for us to be able to extract something out of this in which we worked hand-in-hand with the business community in the House to put together this list of important things that we felt were good in exchange for our votes. And it turned out okay.
Well, the thing that surprised me about this was I didn't expect the Democrats to do it, and they didn't have to. Now, granted, you said if they wanted Republican votes, they had to work with us. But given their supermajority and just kind of how we had seen partisan things develop along partisan lines earlier in the session, that this was, to me, somewhat of a surprising concession for a Democratic-controlled one-party state.
Well, I think you probably started to have some angst within the Democrat House side. You know, they just come off a constitutional, they just passed the constitutional amendment and also passed tax rates for new tax rates should the constitutional amendment go into effect. So I know a number of Democrats are not 100% in line with what the, to the left, there are centrist Democrats who probably felt, you know what, this is not going the right way. So we need to perhaps look at what the Republicans have to offer and bring them into the mix. But some of them are just worn out from voting for a lot of these far left, I would say, out of step pieces of legislation that we've seen over the past few months, and they just probably walked away. But also, I think it's also should note that the governor made all these claims at the beginning of the year that, you know what, we got to get these big issues done in a bipartisan manner. And the big issues that he has been working through up until the budget were all Democrat-aligned. Some of these were non-negotiable from our perspective, the constitutional amendment. And some of these, I would say, more social issues that he's been pushing are things that we really weren't engaged in. But when it comes to budget and capital, he should engage Republicans. But if he was going to be true to his words at the beginning of the year, this is the time to do it.
We're speaking with the Illinois House Republican leader, Jim Durkin of Western Springs. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Joining me in studio, Illinois House Republican leader Jim Durkin from Western Springs. And we're talking about kind of wrapping up the end of the spring session. And actually, we've been talking about various issues, and there were some Republican victories as part of the overall budget package. But we've got a call here from Ron. Ron, as always, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick. Representative Durkin, I was listening to your colleague, Senator Brady, on earlier, and just talking about the Republican Party having worked hard on certain positions. But my question is, I mean, is it the message that's not resonating, the messengers? When we look at how this is a one party, I don't know. And I'm just trying to figure out, where is the Republican Party going forward? Is it going to be a new message or something? But just maybe you can answer that for me. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ron.
Sure, Ron. Well, you know, things moved very quickly last week, and Rick and I just spoke about some of the achievements that we were able to accomplish in the last few days that are pro-business reforms, ones that never have ever seen the light of day in Springfield. So this is going to be a concentrated effort to move that out. But I will say this, Ron, where the real fight ahead for the Republican Party is going to be over this constitutional amendment that was that we'll see in the ballot in 2020. That will be an opportunity, but this is, I think, an important time for the Republican Party in this state to show what they are about, to explain to people throughout the state of Illinois that this is a terrible policy, one that will be the death knell, I will say, of the of this state if it does pass. It's the it is. There's no reason that we need this other than it's a fulfillment of a campaign promise. It's a. It sounds great. It polls well, but the fact is, if you dig into it and you look at the short-term, long-term effects of this constitutional amendment, and this fluctuation of rates that they want to come in afterwards, if it passes, it'll be devastating to the state of Illinois. So this is the opportunity for Republicans to be able to reach out throughout the state of Illinois to independent voters, and also, I would say, a number of Democrats who feel that there's nothing coming out of their majority other than more big tax programs. And, you know, the constitutional amendment's about raising somewhere from $3 to $4 billion, and we haven't made the case that we need to do that at this point. We have a flat rate that is applied across the state on all demographics, and that is the only taxpayer protection that is in the Constitution from a rogue legislature. So this is going to be the opportunity. It's going to be a 2020 election. There's going to be great interest on both sides, but this is the time where Republicans will be able to appeal about what we believe in, what we think the right policies are for the state of Illinois, not for the short term, but for the long term. And that's what this is going to be all about.
I'm curious because obviously, you know, this is Governor Pritzker's program and the Democrats voted to put it on to the 2020 ballot. But their argument is that the people opposed to this are defending the wealthy that would pay more under this proposal. And I guess I'm wondering, in this kind of messaging, how do you offset that criticism?
I think that when people look into the what other states have done, states that have similar types of that are similar to Illinois that have imposed this type of tax structure, you'll see that it hasn't been a winner. Like I said earlier, this is the classic class warfare type of proposal that we're going to see. Tax the rich, and that's it. Because you know what? The governor's office and their messaging from the beginning of the year is that everybody's going to get a tax cut.
97%.
But now they're saying their taxes aren't going to change. That's basically the way the message is right now. And that 3%, those 3%, just remember those are the employers of the state. And those 3% pay a significant amount of the taxes in Illinois. But there's nothing in the Constitution that says that those 3% need to live in Illinois. And when they leave, it is going to force the legislature to go back in and to adjust these rates, which means that they're going to be moving these higher rates down to a lower bracket of citizens in Illinois, that $100,000 to $200,000 income bracket. And that's what's going to happen. The Democrats would not put the rates into the Constitution because they know they're going to have to change them. I think that that's significant. I've asked the Democrats in committee if they would do that, and they refuse to do it. But that shows to me that they know that this is going to be a fluctuation in which they'll be able to make changes based on the whims of their spending needs at any given time.
One of the things I thought was interesting was, and I mentioned this to Leader Harris as well as Leader Brady, yeah, we got a budget, and obviously the April surprise of revenue helped kind of be the glue for that because it avoided the trying to balance the budget with tax increases or actually for Democrats who didn't want to make cuts. Understood that. But I guess coming out of this, people are angry about property taxes, and all we got is a task force.
And they
force.
Should be.
All we got is a task force.
That's nothing.
Well, actually, we got a property tax relief fund that was created with a big zero in it.
Yeah, that was interesting. And the debate on the floor about that was almost to the point of absurdity of how the Democrats were responding to it. But this whole issue of that we're going to provide tax relief to Illinois citizens by the creation of another task force falls flat. I've seen a dozen different Blue Ribbon Panel's task force on property tax relief, which have gone nowhere. And I will say that the pessimist in me will say that this will probably end up and have the same fate as the other ones. And I'm not confident there's going to be anything significant or substantial or meaningful that will go towards property tax relief out of the Democrat majority in Springfield. But I will say this. There is one proposal that is from the Cook County Assessor, Assessor Kagi, that we need to work on this summer. That would be a start on how assessments are currently being made in Cook County, and also other counties can opt in under his bill. But that would be a start. There needs to be some fine-tuning of that to find the right balance with the business community to make sure it's not just a shift over to the commercial properties. But that's a start. I think most people realize, we always say that, you know, go in and fight your taxes, and we have these seminars, but nobody gets any tax relief. It's just not the system is not plugged in to be fair for the average guy in the street.
Well, I have to wonder if property taxes aren't, I mean, when you look in conjunction with the effort to try to switch to a graduated rate tax, about, you know, how we all know there would have to be a shift in from state funding to education from the local property tax, which is the big burden of property tax bills is schools. But you know, that's going to take a lot of money. And people look at and they explain that $350 million a year is part of the education reform rewrite bill. And that's, you know, but that's down the line. You know, it will take a while for schools to show any ability to meaningfully reduce property taxes. That means that there's got to be, you know, another revenue source or something to supplement the school funding to make a substantial adjustment in property taxes.
Our commitment, based on the evidence-based formula, the bill that we passed a year and a half ago, which was a bipartisan bill under Governor Rauner, asked for $350 million a year for a period of time. But you know, the Democrats went up to $375. I'm not quite sure why they wanted to do that. Maybe just as a little ding to the governor that the previous governor, we can do better than you. I'm going to always say that our best investment is going to be through K-12. That's important. We have to continue with that commitment. But this sounds like what happened back in the 90s. With the tax swap, it didn't work out too well.
But we never got to a tax swap.
Well, it passed out of the House. It didn't make it into the Senate. Right. And I was there, and it was an interesting time to watch. It was Pate Phillip.
Yes, indeed.
He was pretty strong in his position. But
that's putting it mildly.
Look, I don't want to talk. My caucus is not going to talk about additional revenue anymore.
Right.
We were able to balance a budget this year that didn't rely upon any new taxes or any tax increases, and to me that is what is important in my perspective. But the money is there. If the Democrats are committed towards revenue, do what they did up until the last 3 weeks, which was our working groups and appropriation committees were working on a 6% across the board cuts within agency spending, and that was dropped after the April surprise. Revisit that. For somebody, I hear all the time Democrats saying, oh, we can't cut anymore, we've cut to the bone. That is a lot of nonsense. There are plenty of areas within state government that need to be refined, that have to be revisited, and have to be, you know, we have to be able to find efficiencies, which is not a difficult thing to do because we almost had it done up until this additional revenues came in the middle of April.
Well, and as I discussed earlier about, wouldn't there be a kind of a buy-in to Republicans and the people if there were some cuts that existed?
Well, that's what we had hoped. We don't control the agenda, but this was an opportunity for us to at least have a budget in place that people were desperately looking for, because we had so many troubles over the past 3 or 4 years. So, you know, we have responsibilities towards schools, human services, public safety, and we could not go down the road where we had an impasse. So I felt it was important that we work with them. But the most important thing out of this budget is that the Republicans in the House were able to force a compromise with the Democrat leadership on issues that they have never would ever have taken up before. And to me, that was I wish we'd have gone further. I wish we'd have made some changes on pensions. That is the next issue. If the governor, who has this think big idea, he needs to go in and address pensions this next session, I am with him 100%. That, to me, is the most important and the most pressing issue we have with state finances. So the House Republicans are prepared to work with the governor, the speaker, the president, as long as they're going to be fair with us. I've said at the beginning of the year, this is a two-way street. If you want our support, our buy-in, you've got to be able to accept our priorities as well. And I felt that we've made some we made some gains over the last 3 weeks. But if this governor is not, I'm going to keep calling him out on it. If you're going to be a person that's, if you're going to be a governor that is wants Republican buy-in, you got to accept and you've got to be able to listen to our priorities. And to me, I know the governor can't say that the pensions aren't something that are pressing, but they are. We have to take care of our pensions.
That's Illinois House Republican Leader Jim Durkin from Western Springs. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.